Welcome to the Geeks Roundtable Podcast with Ryan Scherer, Fabio Cafaro, and David Brown. Join us every Thursday at 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern to learn all the geeky goodness from PPC, SEO, dev, design, security, and much, much more. Visit geeksroundtable.com today.
Well, I'd like to welcome you all again to another edition of the Geeks Roundtable. This is Ryan Scherer, and on the phone with me, I have my regular co-hosts, David Brown and Fabio Cufera, and today we have a guest, Liz Brown, who is a content specialist with Matrix Marketing. She's going to be talking with us again today. How is Dave doing today?
I'm doing excellent. Glad everybody's awesome. Alive and well. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's a plus. Yeah, I am. I am back from the dead. Liz, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you for asking.
That's awesome. We're excited to have you on the show today. We've heard a lot about what you're going to be talking about and stuff, so we'll get into it. Fabio, how's my
yes,
man?
Sir.
How you been?
Well, Fabio's doing fabulous also. So,
awesome. And
that's
you're going to be talking
day.
About some Amazon stuff today, aren't you?
Absolutely. Well, but yeah, that's going to be part of our discussion today and how you can get your... Sorry?
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let's say I wanted to start up an Amazon advertising program. How do I start that? How do I do that?
Awesome.
Do you guys mind if I lead into this real quick? We discussed in a previous podcast where I said you had asked me a question before, Ryan. I said, we really need Fabio on for this. So when I was talking to him earlier today, I'd mentioned that we were talking about Amazon ads, Amazon store, and then Amazon product feeds as well. And one clarification on that, and Fabio's the man. So with that, brain dump, man. Let's see what you
right. So, obviously, Amazon is an online shopping store, so most people know what Amazon is. So, if companies have products, they could sell them on Amazon, through Amazon, through the Amazon store. So, there's basically three different platforms that you could use to sell your products. On Amazon. Actually, one way is simply to advertise. Well, let me get into them one by one. But basically, if you have products and you want to advertise on Amazon or you want to sell them through Amazon, it's possible. And there's three different ways to do it. So most people know that people could set up their Amazon store. So if you have products, you can upload your products to the Amazon store and sell it through Amazon. Now, Amazon takes care of a lot of stuff, like the shipping rates and all this stuff. They also have fulfillment by Amazon. So if you have a lot of product, potentially a lot of volume, you could send your products to Amazon. They'll inventory it, store it, and then ship it. So they handle all that stuff. So basically, you want to sell through Amazon, create a store and set up everything that you need to set up. And then, you know, when sales generate, Amazon will transfer the funds to your account. So that's one way, you know. The other thing with Amazon store, if you have a lot of, if you have thin margins on your products, it's not ideal because they do take a significant percentage out of the products. So when a sale goes through, depending on the category that your products fall into, they'll take a certain percentage. It could go up to 15% or potentially more, but I think it's 15% for some categories. Now, the advantage
books
with that...
DVDs. Yeah, books
sorry?
And DVDs, I know. Books and DVDs are the most expensive stuff to sell on Amazon. I know that from past experience. Good.
Exactly. So, I mean, the advantage with that, though, is that there's no cost to advertising, right? So the cost only applies when the product is sold. So because people could click on your people could click on the product page and they could review it and so on and so forth. No, there's no cost to you there. It only happens when there's a transaction. But you could actually...
Real quick question, Fabio. In some of those cases, though, aren't you required to carry like 2,500 products shipped to one of these locations or 10,000 products? I know there's stipulations on some of these, so...
For fulfillment by Amazon? For the fulfillment program? I'm not sure...
You don't have to have a certain amount of stock for the fulfillment by Amazon. You can actually start off with one product. It's pretty interesting. A business partner of mine has been playing with it, him and his wife. They'll go out and go like shopping sprees, and they'll go out and find deals on stuff, and then they'll put it up on Amazon. Basically, you tell Amazon, hey, I've got X, and they say, okay, send it here or send it there. I think what Dave is talking about is to get into certain categories, you have to have a certain number of sales. Like you can't get into beauty supplies until you've got X number of sales and a certain ranking to be able to get into that category. I think that's what he was talking about.
Were you talking about the fulfillment, Dave, or were you talking about placement in certain categories?
I was talking about fulfillment. So
yeah.
It looks like the seller-fulfilled products are quantity no greater than zero. I was looking it up while Brian was talking.
Sure. I'm not sure totally completely on the requirements for the fulfillment program, mainly because InWorks deals with the product ads part of the advertising part of the Amazon store. So there's on the site we could put up the link to the Amazon page on the blog on the podcast the page where there's details on for each and every one of these programs. So people can get the details for the fulfillment program or the Amazon store or any other program that Amazon is offering. So within the Amazon store, you can actually advertise too. So you could promote your products for your Amazon store within Amazon. So basically, you set up your Amazon store and then you can actually advertise those products also. And you could put in keywords. So basically, you have a lot more flexibility, quite a bit of flexibility in being able to promote the products to the Amazon store. The other way, they also offer what's called Amazon display ads. So if you want to have banner ads show up on the website, on the Amazon store, and some of their other properties, you can go through what's called Amazon display ads. But if you want to advertise through this, you have to go through Amazon itself. Amazon has an agency, a dedicated team for advertising. And the entry, so you have to spend a minimum just to get things going. There's a minimum spend of $25,000. So if you want to get started through the display banners, you're going to have to drop at least $25,000 just to get the ball rolling with them.
Wow.
Yeah. But you have their support, you know, so basically you can deal with the agency. So you have a dedicated, not necessarily a dedicated staff, but you have people there that will work with you to provide you reports and statistics and help. But obviously, for any company or anybody dropping at least $25,000, which could cost easily, you know, depending on the volume, I mean, $25,000 could go pretty quickly. So they could set it at $25,000 per month. And then you get, you know, so that's the advertising spend. So obviously, this is good for bigger companies. But there's no, basically what they do is that the main thing is to promote your Amazon store. That's the main thing. So you have banners running and they promote. You can also send traffic to the website, to websites. There's one client that was interested in finding out more information about this, and through Amazon, we'll be able to send traffic to a landing page on the website. But that's pretty much it. You know, it works with banner advertisement, and that's what's available through display ads. Now, thirdly, there's what's called the product ads. So the product ads basically is like kind of like Google Shopping, in that you're able to advertise your products. They come up pretty much like other products. Sometimes when you're looking at a specific product, if you scroll down on the page, you'll see that there's a row of products. So they could be there'll be related products, and then there's like kind of two rows sometimes. The second row tends to be the product ads. So these product ads are obviously related to the product that you're viewing. So the difference with the product ads is that the product ads sends traffic to your website. So people, you can advertise your products individually on Amazon, but then if they click on the product if they click on the product, it looks like a product page, just like any other product, except that it'll say that the purchase takes place on the website. So people click on the link, and it'll send them to to your website, and specifically to the product page. So basically, just like Google Shopping, when you type in a search, right, you see all these products come up. So you click on the product, it'll send them to the product page. And this is what happens with Amazon product ads. The thing with Amazon product ads is that the cost per click tends to be a lot lower, though you don't have as much control as you have with Google Shopping. So, basically you upload your products, you set your bids, and Amazon will use the information that's available to them its algorithm uses the categories, some of the text, to associate your product that you're advertising with other products, related products, you know. And it also, if you're going to add, sometimes there are manufacturer part numbers or SKUs that match other SKUs, you know, Amazon will be able to combine these products together. So, but it's a very effective, the product ads is my favorite. I like the product ads very much because it's very effective. The cost per click tends to be a lot lower than Google Shopping. Though you have less control, I think that anybody who's selling products and is using Google Shopping, I would say look into selling your products via Amazon product ads. You know, if you don't want to set up a store, you don't need to set up a store. But if you, but the thing is, actually, you can actually have both a store and sell product ads. So you can run both at the same time. Some of our clients.
Amazon.
Sorry?
Amazon looks like it has like tons of stuff, because I know, I mean, you've got the product ads, you've got the local ads, you've got the media group part of it, you've got, you can set up a store, you can do fulfillment by Amazon, then that's not even getting into the Amazon Web Services where you get into the database and Amazon S3, which is a simple storage and all that. I mean, and what most people probably don't know is that Amazon's been in the web game from way, way back in the day. I mean, I've had an Amazon S3 account for over 20 years. So before they became Amazon.com, they were still selling other services. But it's phenomenal.
I think they launched in 95. I remember watching a report, rather an interview on 2020, many, many years ago. Jeff Bezos still had hair. So it was in 1995 and he told the story of how he came up with this idea of selling books on the internet, and then he got people to invest. His parents were part investors, and that's how they started, you know, selling books online.
Right. But we're talking about Jeff Bezos AH now, after her. So the other thing, and Fabio, you and I discussed this a little bit earlier today too. You know, the nice thing about being able to do this, if you're doing the Google PLAs and you're doing well with that, that's great. Google is the search monster. We all know this. But there's a lot of folks out there that are Amazon Prime members that enjoy, you know, all the different benefits that come from Prime, including one-click purchases. So if it's something where you can stay, I know you mentioned the 15% earlier, and I have looked at that already for a couple of things, because I was telling Melanie to, you know, start getting rid of all this junk, and instead of using Craigslist, we can just take a truckload of crap down to Amazon, drop it off, and then let whoever wants it buy it. There's actually a post I read where a guy was saying it's cheaper than renting a storage unit, depending on where you live, I assume, to go ahead and put all that stuff down at an Amazon fulfillment center. So while that may be true, I don't know. I haven't tested it, but I do know that there's a ton of people that use Amazon all the time. I use it all the time. We're using Prime Pantry now, which is actually pretty cool as well. Any Prime members have seen that. It's $6, and you can fill up your cart with all kinds of regular stuff. And there's a couple of websites that have already popped up using APIs based off your zip code, your average cost of groceries, the normal top-of-the-line stuff, or the branded products. There's a, I think it's called Cheat Amazon Groceries or something like that, and it'll basically tell you, if you know what you normally buy, you can plug all the stuff in. For geeks like us, I enjoy this kind of geeky stuff, but we can put in all the stuff we normally get, like Charmin, 18-pack and blah-de-blah, yada-yada. You can save X amount on this. There's manufacturer coupons, blah-de-blah, yada-yada.
Yeah.
They're testing out, sending it out to everybody. So pretty cool stuff. But to me, if you're in a competitive market space and you have you have the ability to make some money on your products because you're either manufacturing them or you've got a good line on something, it seems to me like that would be a really good spot to go. And I know I've talked to other people in the past too. That's why I asked, do we have to put 10,000 products in order to get here? So,
yeah. Well, I just want to go back to the product ads a little bit. And because, you know, if a company that doesn't have a strong web presence, you know, with their website, the store could be very beneficial, you know, because the, but so basically for anybody who doesn't want to put up a store, you want to put up just a few items, having an Amazon store could be very beneficial. But if you want to put your focus on your website, the product ads are very beneficial. And mostly because if you look at, you know, as in your marketing campaign, right, ideally you want to try to be not everywhere, but wherever your potential customers could be, you should have a presence there, right? And so you should know this. You should know where to place your ads, mainly because you understand who you're selling to. So if you have products, if you're using product ads on Amazon, it's very interesting to see. One of my favorite areas in analytics is the assisted conversions section.
For the win.
Yeah, the multi-channel funnel. Sorry, the multi-channel funnel and the top conversion paths. So as you expand your marketing, your advertising, you know, you go from AdWords potentially to Bing, and then if you add Amazon or even Facebook, it's so cool to see how people search. You know, like I have, I look at the strings, right? The paths that people take. So some people will start off on Amazon, come to the website through the product ad, then come back through AdWords, and then finally purchase through organic. And the cool thing is that if you didn't have the product on Amazon, that search, that path would never have begun. So you would never have gotten that, potentially never have gotten the conversion because the person was not aware of your website, you know?
Potentially, so, either, because they could have found you organically, right? But I agree.
Yes.
I yelled out for the win or because it's just a conversion. To me and Fabio, we've done this so many times with clients. It's the Jordan would not have been Jordan if Pippen didn't feed him the ball as well as he did. Those are assisted conversions, right? So pay-per-click all across the board, PLAs, Amazon ads, Google AdWords, Bing ads. Is it okay if I ask you about the Bing, the new deal? We mentioned that on the last podcast.
No, I haven't had a chance to.
Okay, it is brand new, but we do expect to report back on that for
sure.
Because we've talked about the five gold stars showing up because of RDFA or microdata, schema, et cetera, in the organic listings, and Google AdWords is allowing you to do that. Bing's just released these bright orange stars, which are apparently drawing the eyeballs. I don't use Bing as my natural search because I want to find things I'm looking for. that being said, no search keeps laughing at that. Great. Anyways, we'll discuss that. I know that is a very big deal, and people are going to be looking into that. So, to have quality customer service and getting reviews. And
since we started the podcast, we haven't really talked about Bing all that much. I like Bing. I mean, I love AdWords, but Bing, because of all the changes that they've been making, and part of their strategy is to make it as similar as possible to AdWords. So there's not really much of a learning curve. There is a learning curve, of course, because it's not identical. But Bing, basically, what they've done is that they've, whatever features are available in AdWords, they've pretty much copied them. So the transition from AdWords to Bing isn't that hard, simply because if you're familiar with AdWords, then Bing itself is not that much of a learning curve. But because it doesn't integrate with analytics, there's a bit of a, there's some changes, some adjustments you need to make. The URL parameters, the tracking URLs parameter, the tracking parameters for the URLs are important. And then there's also exporting. You could also, analytics has a cost data upload. So you're able to export Bing cost data and upload it to analytics. And then you can see your ROAS within analytics. But anyways, we'll get into Bing another day. So that's it for Amazon. So Amazon, you have these three main areas for your products. You can create your own Amazon store, or if you want to go through the display ad to promote your store or products or whatever. And then finally, your product ads, which I would recommend if you have products, start off there because it doesn't cost you anything. Not that it doesn't cost you anything. You could start off with just a little bit. It's not too hard if you're familiar with product feeds. And they also give you a $75 credit to start off with. So if you just want to try out a couple of $100, the first $75 is free because Amazon covers it. So
that's what is that? The crack marketing approach? The first hit's free, everything after that costs.
Well, Amazon also on their store, they have, it's like $40 a month for an Amazon store fulfillment by Amazon. But your first $40 is your first month's free. A lot of that, there's a lot of trial period where you can get in and mess with those things with Amazon. And then when I talked about Amazon Web Services for the really, really geeky people out there, you can run database, you can run websites, you can run simple storage, you can run cold storage. There's just so many different services, and there's a link to all each one of them, the Amazon store, filmed by Amazon, advertising, and web services are all in the description.
Perfect. So to tie these two together, since we don't have a commercial break, let's something Fabio mentioned earlier, some of the HTTPS has been screwing up some of his work. We'll go ahead and forego that conversation right now because we've just done a whole bunch about Amazon. And I do want to remind all of our listeners, if you have any questions about this, please go to Geeks Roundtable, ask a question section. It's right there up at the top. Ask a question. We'll do our best to answer that live on our next podcast. And in the near future, we're also going to be releasing a phone number about 15 minutes prior to start every Thursday at 1 Pacific Standard, 4 Eastern. You can do the math if you live in the middle of the country. At least we hope, or else we'll start putting that in there. So you guys can call in and ask us questions and stump us if that's possible. I'm sure it is. If not, we'll make it something that sounds good and then find our argument online to back it up. Just kidding. Anyways, Ryan and I have been spending quite a bit of time on the new Matrix Marketing website, matrixmarketing.co or neonseo.com, same thing. When we launched the new site, which, by the way, we have launched it. It launched, on Monday, I believe. We didn't take out a press release or anything of that nature, but we were noticing some issues with my site, whereas Ryan's site, DS Knights, has got the nice green lock that says HTTPS on it. We've gone through and done the SEO checklist, the HT access rewrites, and everything of that nature. And Ryan spent quite a bit of time on it yesterday and found something that is quite hilarious. So Google's trying to push all of us to HTTPS. I'll stop here and let you explain why this is funny, Ryan.
Well, I ran into this the other day. I was playing with the Matrix Marketing website, trying to get Dave's lock to show up green. And what that basically means is everything is under the HTTPS. There's no insecure things. So a lot of times when you have that lock that doesn't show up green, it's because you've got images that are not under the HTTPS. The link to the images are just a simple HTTP. One of the things that I found was Google Fonts.
Except we did all of our images as relative URLs, meaning
right.
Slash images, slash, so that shouldn't be an issue.
Right, so one of the images, so I'm looking, and basically the way you kind of troubleshoot this for, you know, anybody out there having trouble with it, you just look at the code. You go to the site, do a few source, or bring it up in your editor, however you do your web stuff, and you look at it and say, okay, where are my HTTPS? So you can do like a control or command F, and that's your find, and type in HTTPS or HTTP. So you're looking for it. Okay, what's going to HTTP? So I'm looking at all these script tags, and they're all going to HTTP. And I'm like, all right, okay, well, let's start changing these out. So one of which, script tags, was Google Fonts. So here we are with Google Fonts, HTTP, instead of HTTPS. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just put HTTPS. Well, when you're putting in the code, the HTTPS will not render. So here's Google, you know, saying, hey, do as I say, not as I do. Now, with that said, if you take it out and you throw it directly into the browser, it will render the screen with your fonts, with your CSS for your fonts, but not inside your own code. I couldn't figure that out. So we're still messing with that. But yeah, we got a kick out of it. It's like, oh yeah, Google's saying, oh, everybody has to be on HTTPS, and then they're not, which they are, but they aren't. So it's kind of weird and funny in the same, because you're like, all right, well, I can get it to render if I just take the whole link, you know, to it, and I put it in my browser, it'll render the thing. But if I have it in my code as HTTPS, it won't. So a bit of a snafu at this point, but we'll figure it out.
Cool. I was just texting Liz about to throw you under the bus. So the HTTPS, we've talked about that in great detail. And because Ryan's back was messed up and he fell asleep for the entire day, right up until 10 minutes before the show. So we had already planned out something different. That's why we weren't really, there was a side rant from Dave, the HTTPS. It's being a fun deal for us. And, you know, obviously we learn on everything that we do for our own sites, and that's why we have as many sites as we do. So we can learn on these. So when clients come in, oh yeah, we know how to handle this. We know how to handle that. Very easy. But I was telling Liz, she's going to have to come in today, and she was a little concerned. I told her to bullet point out a couple of things to talk about with content marketing, and she sent me 500 words, which is not what I was looking for.
No, closer to 400.
We're not reading from a script. Oh, okay, closer to 400. Well, you're the content editor.
Well, she's a content writer. What do you expect? Right. When you ask a content writer for content, they're going to give it to you. So speaking of Liz, you've been working a lot with the Matrix Marketing site on the content end, and today you're going to share with us kind of like what are the do's and don'ts, right?
Correct.
Some tips and tricks and some how to get your – we all know that you need quality content, right? So these are primarily some tips and tricks on how to get those out there. You know, you don't want just your grandma and your cousin and your aunt and your mom to show up and read your blog post. They're probably not going to start to demo shopping.
Probably not going to have any conversions there.
More conversion-focused results, right? So,
Absolutely. So with regard to quality content, what exactly constitutes as quality content? There's conflicting information out there with regards to word count. You'd want to have at least 350 words. Quality content for me as a content writer and editor is content that says what you're trying to say without filler words and creating doubt. If you're trying to sell your blue widget or your green widget and then the content on your site has those types of words, maybe you want to, perhaps you could, maybe you should look at, you're not selling me anything. That being said, you don't want to sound too sales pitchy in your content either. You don't want hyperlinks all over the place, an unfettered promotion of your product. You got big flashing ads already on the website surrounding the content, and now you've got banner ads and click here and click there and your products linked everywhere within the content itself, not to mention there was a pop-up window the minute I got on the site asking me to sign in with my email or do you need help. I'm already turned off. I'm already leaving the website. In the content.
So you're saying that Ling's used cars is probably not the way to go. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
That is our favorite example, what Ryan just mentioned, and we should put that in the podcast description.
Well, I'll put a link.
Ling's used cars is our favorite no-no. This is what we show to other clients. Yes, we can do all of this. However, we choose not to, and we suggest you don't either. And Liz has brought up some really good points. And at the end of the day, for me, the biggest shining point for what we do with our content is creating quality content that not only Google loves and it's on a regular basis and that's all taken care of. It's something where people can ask questions. People are using Google more and more like a magic eight ball. How do I do this? How do I do this? How do I solve this problem? So whatever, ask yourself as a small business owner, what problems do I solve for my target demographic? Talk about it. Write something really good. Yes, you can put 50 internal links on that page. However, that's going to make Google look at you like you're a link farm, and it's going to turn anybody else off that's a blogger in your industry. There was a really great post over here. However, this post has like 50 links to a bunch of their junk, so we're not going to link to it. So our quality content, when we're doing content marketing, we're looking to provide answers to questions, common questions that people on the web have, and then hoping that other people out there have similar type verticals and blogs and whatnot, and they can turn around and say, here's a really good article on this. And then that's where you're getting your links back to your site on different C-class IP blogs. Those are
ultimately the most important thing that we're looking for offsite SEO purposes. So while some people in your company may be trying to force that hand and saying, oh, well, we've got a link to a whole bunch of other stuff and link to every product that we have, here's a real quick, simple way to go and see how many links you have. Log into Webmaster Tools and check out your internal links. And if you have 500 plus links already to something, probably not necessary for you guys to link back to it again in, you know, every third paragraph or at all, for that matter. Because who's going to link to that? They're linking basically to a paid ad, and most people don't link to that. So, you know, anyway, sorry for cutting you off, Liz. I just wanted to state that. So.
Yeah, definitely agree with everything there. And don't link to it. Just don't. With regards to content links, we're seeing that there's a proven higher rank with Google on blog posts that are 2,000 words or more, and that is because it receives more social media votes and shares. And ultimately, that is the way your content's going to spread, and that might be how people came to your site initially to begin with. If you're a new business and no one's ever heard of you, they're not searching for you in Google. It's the content you're putting out. It's being shared on Facebook, Pinterest, Twitter. You got to have great images, clickable images. That's what's bringing people to your site. And then they're on the site. They can see your products and decide to make a purchase. Don't get all sales pitchy on them. In social media, Pinterest images are extremely important. You definitely want images that cause a pinner to repin your pin. And that's a great place to put your blog content and encourage. Your blog content needs to be on your business Pinterest account. And you can revolve your content around the boards that Pinterest users are more drawn to. And those are your home hacks, how to do it yourself, or DIY boards, how-to tutorials, looking at home tips and remedies. You want to have great infographics that go with that. You revolve the content around that, and people will pin and repin and drive traffic to your site ultimately.
Right.
So, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, let's do some, you keep talking to us. I know the DIY boards are very popular on Pinterest. But if the blue widgets you're selling are primarily to men, Pinterest probably isn't your target demographic. So Pinterest still about 72, 74% female demographic?
Yeah, somewhere around there, yeah.
Somewhere around there. So there are popular ways to take care of that. Pinterest has just started allowing advertising. We had a couple of clients that were in their beta program, which they're great. They're sending all kinds of traffic. Although we're very conversion focused, and like Fabio mentioned earlier in the podcast, sometimes if it wasn't for the Amazon ad, which I clearly rebutted, unless they found it organically, right, Fabio? the assisted conversions are huge to us because searchers are weird, and we can prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt. Searchers are weird. They'll come in any number of way and then come in a second time any number of ways and then come in a third or a fourth or 16 different times before large purchases are made. So there's really lots of different ways out there. So the best thing you can do is have a strong social presence, do paid advertising, and make sure that your content marketing is solid. Answer those questions through content marketing, because a lot of times the content marketing is really just to make sure that we're coming up organically for stuff, right?
Right.
Rather than sending links back to landing pages. But we just had a real big team meeting a couple of days ago about this, and we have to continually change. This is like hitting a moving target. Google keeps keeps changing their algorithm because SEO spammers are out there and they do this, they do that, yada, yada. We don't ever want to get caught, and knock on wood, none of our clients have ever been put into penalty. Thank God. That's not a challenge, Google, in case you're listening. anywho, there's a lot of other things that we can do. And Liz is blogging. Now that we have the new site up, we have a very nice, clean blog platform. There's no ads. We're not trying to sell you anything. We're trying to be not promotional. We're trying to put out quality content, which is what Google wants. In fact, we just launched all the SEO 101 training videos that I was hired to do back in 08. A lot of it's deprecated. It's not good information anymore. But for beginners and newbies, we have a full-on spot for that. As soon as we get our HTTPS figured out, Ryan, that'll be set up, and everybody will see that on the main page of the site. Go check them out. If you guys have any questions about that, let us know. Other than that, Ryan's telling me we've got about 4 minutes left.
3 minutes.
Probably.
Quickly, I just wanted to, since you mentioned assisted conversions, I was just looking at an analytics account right now, and it's a client that's using Amazon, and there's a conversion that took place. And the person visited the website 30 times before buying a $335 item, and used 4 different sources or channels. AdWords played a part, direct, Google Organic, and then Amazon. And then throughout all of this, they visited the website directly. Anyways, as you can see, people search a lot, you know, they do a lot of extensive research before making a purchase. And this is an amazing, like, you guys can't see it, obviously, but it's, to me, this is a beautiful thing because this website is found on different channels or different sources, it leads the person back to the website, you know, one way or another. If you take up a lot of presence, you know, people are bound to come back to the website and potentially buy. So it's a beautiful
top of mind. Yep, top of the purchase process. So, hey Liz, real quickly before we go, before this is over, can you give us just like bullet point? And by the way, if Liz gets cut off on this live episode, we don't have that many live listeners. Almost all of you download, so we're going to go into ish as soon as the live bit is over. Liz, can we hit some of the top, you know, you've been talking to me about this. I'd like to hear it on the air. Top times for posting on the different social media channels. They're not all the same. A lot of people think, well, if it's good to post at noon on this platform, then every platform should be handled at this time. And that's just simply incorrect. So,
is incorrect.
So what do you got?
So Facebook, we've got varying times, not only during the day, but during the week. 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. tends to result in a higher average click-through rate on Wednesdays, but on the weekend, it's before 8 a.m. and after 8 p.m.
Peak
times on Twitter. Okay.
I'm sorry, real quickly. The last time we went through something like this, right, because I've read like 5 or 6 of these articles before I was going to talk to you about it. Nobody mentioned time zones. Fabio and Ryan are both in the Eastern Standard Time. So you're telling me that if they post at 8 a.m., which is, 11 a.m. my time on the West Coast, does anybody have a definitive East Coast, West Coast? Because we have numbers from David McGinnis that was doing PR Web when he had that large scale study done, right? For PR Web.
Right.
So what are these numbers coming from? You, Russ, and I are all on the West Coast. Bobby and Ryan are on the East Coast. When you're talking about this, what are you talking about? Time zones. What I'm getting at.
Well, like I said initially, there is conflicting information out there. There's tons of articles and infographics that cover different time zones. I guess I'd probably have to really look at that before I could give you a definitive answer. But a lot of what I read is posting East Coast times. So 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. would translate over here, you know, what, 7?
It's 10 a.m. to noon.
Oh, yeah, see? That's why you're the math whiz, kid.
Oh. It's plus 3, so, yeah. Oh, I've missed my fair share of meetings for not realizing. And Arizona, you guys suck, by the way. Sometimes you do daylight saving times, other times you don't. They're the most difficult state to figure out. Anywho, everybody else is awesome, and Arizona's actually not that hard. And I apologize to any of my clients that actually listen to that, because we do have Arizona clients. But there's, I don't know, somebody was telling me George W. Bush made a change for Arizona only. I think that's probably BS, but. Anywho, sometimes they don't do daylight savings time, but they do the other, whatever the case may be. Anywho, it's a little confusing. It would be really cool if any developers out there are listening to this, or Ryan, if you could develop something where we could give you all the data for the best times to promote tweets on this platform, or not tweets, but social media on this platform, that platform, this platform, that platform. And just read your IP and then just told you the actual answer. You know what I mean? That would be super huge and super helpful. Would love to see something like that, because it is hard. Wait a second. Pinterest was at this time. Twitter was at this time. Facebook was at this time. YouTube was at this time. Google Plus was at this time. Is that Pacific or Eastern, or and based off of what data and yada yada? So we could take in some large data sets, figure all that stuff out, and then just create a tool and let everybody know, like, oh, cool. You'd think Owly or Hootsuite or somebody would, yeah, Hootsuite, which is the Owly URL shortener, would have figured this out by now, but anywho. Sorry for cutting you off again, Liz. Go ahead with the numbers. And the times and everything, and we'll just not know what time zone it's in. So the time zone. We'll get it figured out eventually.
Okay.
So. And we're constantly, yes. So you guys know, we're constantly testing these numbers on our own to see what is coming in, what's doing what. So we'll add our data to the grand mix as well. So there you go. Carry on.
Okay, so peak times Twitter, looking Monday through Thursdays, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. I guess that would be 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the West Coast time. LinkedIn, Tuesdays and Thursdays, noon, and then again around 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., people are checking their LinkedIns. I don't have any data up on Reddit right now, and there's conflicting out there. Pinterest Saturday mornings is a big time. People are pinning Saturday mornings. There wasn't a definitive time. Fridays at 3 p.m. is a big time on Pinterest. I don't know, Tumblr, if you're interested in that, Friday evenings, 7 p.m. and after. And then Sundays through Tuesdays on Tumblr, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. is their peak time. There's a lot of people on that site. Google Plus, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. across the board, and then Wednesdays. Did you have something?
9 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yep, no, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Google Plus has an hour worth of
time. So that's
time
the one that has
on
the 1 hour window, right?
1 hour window.
Because nobody is using Google Plus anymore. And by the by, was it Fabio? You were on the call with me, and we were talking about the new tech and everything, and I called the Google Glass shutting down. Google Glass shut down.
Yeah.
Everybody that's in the Explore program got a complimentary black coffee cup that says Glass on it, and it's mentioned on Reddit. If you hold it a certain way, it just says ass when you drink out of it. So everybody got screwed out of that, and then Microsoft launches the big deal today, the holographic glass. glasses, those look freaking awesome. So, anywho, I'm just mentioning that. Nobody really uses Google Plus.
No, they don't. Hence the our long time frame of post-worthy materials. Back to the Reddit question. The thing about Reddit and what makes Reddit harder to monitor is that they've got a plethora of subreddits. So what may be a good time to post in one subreddit on Reddit is a complete opposite time you would post in another. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and this is why we see things on the front page, like out of Australia. America's asleep. Post this real quick so it gets to the front page, right? While most of America is sleeping, the Australians come onto Reddit and try and do funny stuff. And we love the Australian people out there. You guys are hilarious. And kangaroo tastes great. Joking. But yeah, it is hard to tell. Learn your subreddit before you do anything. There's the best advice you can get.
Well, and there's the ABT, always be testing. And we are always testing. So, I mean, really the only thing I can say across the board that is a definitive is with Twitter, the lunchtime breaks. So, you know, obviously they differ coast to coast. But the lunchtime breaks is where you're going to see a lot of retweeting and people that schedule tweet content. Lunchtime break. And I've seen that on my own personal Twitter account. That's when I start tweeting. That's when I'm notified. That's when I'm taking my social media break and reading through what people are sharing and then sharing what I found interesting or took something away from myself.
I, on the other hand, walk completely away from the computer at lunchtime. I do the majority of my tweeting in the morning, and I really don't care if anybody retweets me or not, or this, that, or the other thing. And then I do some more in the evening, but, you know, clout scores, be damned, I'm doing fairly well. So, good stuff. We'll put a lot of this, and Liz writes on the Matrix Marketing blog, and hopefully we can get Ryan to do that and Fabio to do that. And we've talked to Lauren Baker this year and Search Engine Journal. Hopefully we can get some quality content up on SEJ. And we'll see where it goes from there. All the other fun stuff, we'll report back, put it out on Geeks Roundtable, and let you guys know what's happened, what's going on. Did either of you guys have anything to add to any of that, or did it all sound freaking awesome?
No, we're well into the ish, and I think it was relatively good content you guys have put out today. I would like Fabio to kind of take us back around and maybe do a recap on some of the Amazon stuff. Once you hear this there, Fab.
Sure. So basically, once again, to advertise on you have three ways you could promote your products or your Amazon store through Amazon. One of them being you create your own Amazon store. You can advertise through your Amazon store. Then there's the display banner ads, but remember, it's a minimum of $25,000 to get started. And then finally, your product ads, which is something that you manage on your own, just like your Amazon store. But the product ads, the traffic comes to your website. So that's pretty much for the Amazon thing.
Cool. Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dave, well, you want to lead us out?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Liz. I'm sorry if I was cutting you off. We'll get you on, and we'll have a couple of other people on in the future. And, you know, we're missing a Ryan or a Fabio here and there every once in a while. Because they're getting old, doctor appointments and whatnot. had to throw that in there. So expect Liz to come back. Maybe someday we'll get Russ on here, even Paul. Who knows? We'll see what we come up with. If you guys have any questions or comments, just hit up the Ask a Question section on geeksroundtable.com.
let us know anything you guys would like us to talk about. We don't have to mention your site. We're not going to pick you apart. We're going to do what we can to help you out. So remember that, geeksroundtable.com, every Thursday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. You guys figure it out in the middle time zones there. So for the Geeks Roundtable podcast, this is David.
This is Fabio.
This is Ryan. This is Fabio.
I love doing that. This is Ryan and Liz. We want to thank you for coming on the show. It was a great show. I appreciate y'all listening. I appreciate all you guys putting all your time and effort into putting the show together.
Well, thank you for having me.
We'll see you guys.
Take care, guys.
Okay, then. Bye.
Welcome to the Geeks Roundtable Podcast with Ryan Scherer, Fabio Caffaro, and David Brown. Join us every Thursday at 1 Pacific, 4 Eastern to learn all the geeky goodness from PPC, SEO, dev, design, security, and much, much more. Visit geeksroundtable.com today.